as companies, people spend more time working for you than they do anything else in life, period. It's just the way our culture is aimed. And so if we're not concerned about their health and seeing them holistically, then who will be? And there's two sides to that coin, right? Because that can also build a really strong sense of entitlement that is not true. And so it feels like maybe these shouldn't be new things, but they really are culturally new things. It's new phenomena that we're dealing with. And it is, you know, this is really the first time that people are looking at companies and saying, you should have an ethical compass and you should be concerned for your people. And I'm coming all the way back to the beginning. I do believe that flourishing means that everybody is succeeding.
Welcome back to our interview with Whiteboard co-founders Eric Brown and Taylor Jones. This is part two of our conversation about their recent B Corp certification. If you haven't listened to part one, then please hit pause and check that out first. And for this episode, I had the opportunity of having a co-host, my good friend Lowry Moyle. Lowry spent a decade in public policy before creating Thankful Gleaner. So I hope you are encouraged by this conversation as we explore the ways in which business can contribute to the thriving of our community. This is the Camp House Podcast, and I am your host, Matt Busby.
About how good the relationship between the B Corp certification is with Whiteboard, and in terms of the relationship you have with your clients, are you evangelistic about B Corp to your clients too?
A lot of our clients are curious,
yeah,
you know, and have been asking us a lot of questions. You know, it was always a hope, I think, for us, you know, when we decided to pursue this, and when we found out we were the only people in Chattanooga that actually landed the certification, we certainly believe that we won't be the last, you know, and we hope that, like, you know, organizations like Camp House and other for-profits who are serving, you know, who are doing purposeful things and meaningful things will also consider the certification. It was a great, like, it was a hard process, but it was a great process. And I mean, as is all of life, the hard things are usually the worthwhile things.
And you had you talked about B Corp having teeth, right? So were there things that you had to give up in terms of founder owners that the process brought along?
I think there were things we had to formally commit to. I don't think there was anything we came across that was like, oh man, we really don't want to give that up. Because most of the teeth is very much in line with how our worldview is formed. But there were certainly things where we're like, man, making this commitment is really risky. Mm-hmm. It's really like, this is because, you know, I value autonomy sort of in running a company. And what I mean by that is not that I want to be in control, but just that we need to be agile and be able to move quickly. And the more teeth you have in other institutions, like even financing, the less autonomy you have to operate within your values. And so anytime we're making a formal commitment to that, it can be difficult. And I would say that that's what I felt more through the process, was that we're making a commitment that we really can't go back and change. So we're having to say that despite whatever uncertainty is coming in the economic environment, this has to be maintained. You know, we're signing a contract with each other that this is going to happen. So it was certainly more, I think, the fear of, all right, we gotta commit to this formally.
So as you guys went through this assessment, what was one or two things that were actually surprising? Like you really didn't expect B Corp to really take that into account, right?
The depth at which they really want you to articulate HR related things as it pertains to how you, the depth at which you consider and impact employees. And again, for us as a small business, I think the perspective would certainly be different than if you were running a, you know, a larger manufacturing institution where, you know, our HR management, which I hate that phrase, at a team of 20, is very different than people who are managing a large production facility, for sure. And so, but the depth at which they go into those things is pretty interesting. The depth at going into suppliers, if that's, you know, an element that you're in, is also pretty interesting. Governance, how the company is run, governed, how decisions are made is pretty in depth. I mean, it goes in depth into most mm-hmm. everything. I don't know that there's an area where I wasn't like, wow, this is, you know, God, this is getting pretty into the weeds.
It actually made me fall in love with Patagonia even more. I mean, to truly see them as a pioneer and visionary visionary organization in terms of how holistic companies are meant to do good in the world. I mean, kudos, Yvonne, anything that we kind of see from Patagonia that they're releasing on, like, how do you, anything that they do on mission-driven companies and the resources that they provide are things that I'm looking towards just because it's really impressive.
Like, let me paint an example. So when we went to the B Corp retreat and we were listening to a panel, and there's a company that makes sort of like a household, they make like clothes washing detergent and a whole bunch of things. And there were some things I never knew till I sat and listened to this panel, that the very limited regulation on ingredient disclosure. So it is unbelievable the amount of things that companies are not required to disclose are in the ingredients of consumables. So even with things like food, so one of these, and I'm recognizing we're four guys sitting in a room, what I'm going to say, like, feminine hygiene products is one of the least regulated areas dealing with ingredient disclosures. Mm-hmm. And so at this particular company makes products in that line, and their problem is the suppliers that they have to use aren't required legally to disclose ingredients. Hmm. So the things that they have to use to create their products, they can't even get ingredient lists. So, you know, they're sort of describing that we want to, but we literally can't. There's not a supplier we can utilize that will give the transparency of what goes into these sort of products. And I think, you know, for the B Corp stuff and process really gets at that. It's like, what is involved in the work you're actually doing, and what is the real impact all the way through to every single stakeholder in every action that you take, which is a lot to consider.
Well, we know that once you guys get your B Corp certification, one of the things is that you're required to do is continually grow. Mm-hmm. And I believe your guys' score is in the 80s right now. And so, you know, kind of how do you guys already have a strategic plan for, like, the next year on how, you know, you're going to hit maybe 90 or 100 or whatever? Yep. Do you guys already have a plan in place to kind of institute that process?
We have some objectives. So going through the process is sort of like, all right, here's 10 things that we could do. And so as it kind of comes down to, and you're trying to get past the initial certification score, it's like, all right, you know, I think our first score was like a 74. So we were pretty close without having to do a lot of things we had not already planned to do strategically anyway. So we got over the threshold, but we had, you know, maybe 10 or 15 other things that we said, hey, these aren't too far away. Like, there's some objectives to that. You know, one of those things is like energy. So with like EPB Solar Share right now, you know, making a commitment to that, that's something that we're exploring. That I forget, it's a couple of points that you can score by formally having all of your energy sourced clean. And it's like, we're an agency, so how does that play? But it does. And one of the things that's really neat about the assessment is it really doesn't matter what scale you are. Mm. So it's not saying you have to, you know, you don't have to be, you don't have to be a certain size in order for you to achieve these points.
Because so much of it is how you set up your business. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And there are a lot of environmental things that are hard. Again, it's like, you know, what are your greenhouse emissions? I have no idea. I don't even know how I would calculate that. Right. But that's something that, you know, maybe we need to explore even at a small scale, things like that. So we have things in our docket that are being considered for future continued advancement.
Yeah, so you mentioned the conference that you went to. Alex mentioned that to me a couple of weeks ago. I was just interested, what's the B Corp community like? I mean, do you guys engage quite a lot? Or?
It has a lot of teeth, the community does. You know, I think what we realized quickly is that all of these people are in the same room because we all care about bettering the world through the business sector. And there was not any fluff, I think that's one of the biggest critiques that we've heard is like B Corp's kind of vague and vague on purpose in some of their marketing, and being around other companies and people who are leading those companies. I mean, they truly care about the impact that they're making, more so than the profits, more so than the, you know, and I think that's just where, that's really where the magic is within the community itself. And it's a community that leans on each other. We were excited to meet some new friends at that gathering.
Yeah, I think what's so exciting about the, when we're talking about the larger B Corp community and what this can do on a global level, you know, there's the book out there, If Mayors Ruled the World. And it's, and the whole notion is that, you know, nation states and governments are kind of powerless with some of the changes that are happening on a global level. And I think that, you know, the key example of this is global warming. Mm-hmm. That it's actually mayors of major cities around the world that actually have more power to fight global warming than even governments do at this point. And I feel like a side argument to that too, or a good complement to the power of mayors is going to be the power of corporations, right, moving forward. And so that, I think that's yep. what's so exciting about this B Corp is creating this kind of a network of corporations, because that network is incredibly powerful, right?
Right. You know, and I think for us, you know, we're geographically, we're in the Southeast. There's not a lot of B Corps in the Southeast United States. And there's three currently in the state of Tennessee. And I think there is totally room to grow in terms of even our region geographically, in terms of businesses who just put forward the mandate that we're going to go after the certification for, you know, I think it could make the Southeast a lot stronger as well.
So I'm kind of in this space. I play a little bit in this space. And one of the things that I've been thinking through is measuring outcomes and impact.
Right.
And I also know that people who measure things tend to then pivot towards what they're measuring. So I'm just wondering, have you guys seen a pivot? And I guess the follow-on question to that is is the tail wagging the dog sometimes?
I'm going to answer your question sideways.
Do it.
I agree with you that there's an obsession with metrics that tends to be like that. That's sort of the part of capitalism that people hate at the end of the day, is when you stick a single number on something and it becomes the total and complete objective at all cost, even when that number is good. Mm. So even when that number is for good, like as an example, this is probably not a great example, but we did a project with a group way early on who was they're building an entire city in Cambodia, basically trying to rebuild an entire community. And we went over there for a trip and were touring around as this project was starting. And a previous organization had come in and built restrooms. They didn't have bathrooms in this community. And so they built it, but they didn't provide any funding for ongoing maintenance or education. So you had this vacant, you know, disgusting, the community was suffering because it was living on a dump. So it already had problems with hygiene, and then they built a restroom facility that just exacerbated that point further. And so to that point, like that was a rallying cry around something for good that ended up being something bad. And I think that the problem with metrics is the accountability. And I think a big piece of that is just not defining the metrics to enough levels. You know, we're going through this on our team right now. We've been trying to set a clear, you know, rallying people around a vision. Vision usually has to have points of accountability, and that usually looks like a metric. But the problem with that is when you stick one, like if revenue is the thing, the economic reality is revenue is the thing, period. Like there's nothing that is more important to the ongoing sustainability of your business than keeping the revenue alive. But the problem is when that's the number that you label number one, nobody's good at dualities. Mm-hmm. or to the factor of three. Like we really have three objectives we want to achieve and they work in harmony, but none of us as humans are good at that. And so I think the problem, like that's the difficulty with metrics. So for us, as far as like tail wagging the dog, you know, as a team, I wouldn't say we've set any numerical objectives around B Corp specific things that have created that. But I certainly understand how, again, in an organization with more scale, with a higher degree of product or manufacturing, where that could become an issue for sure. You know, like there was a guy we were talking to it who works for a packaging company. They make high-end packaging for things like golf balls, chocolates, all kinds of stuff. And they're striving to be a zero-waste organization. Mm. And he was using a pen at the table. And he said, you know, the funny thing is I can't dispose of this pen because it has ink in it. It has a spring in it. It has plastics. Like in order to dispose of this properly, I have to take the entire thing apart and it's a pen. So like at what level how granular do you go in that? And as far as what is actually productive? So that was a sideways answer. I'm sorry.
No, that's helpful.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're doing this year as a company is related to the B Corp certification. We actually are going to do a form of an impact report for 2017. And, you know, and we see a lot of impact, you know, through the clients that we serve, you know, and telling their stories is obviously going to be a big part of this project. But at the same time too, like pulling in those values and being able to measure, you know, my hope would be, the ideal would be in the next 30 years, you'd have 30 years of here's the impact that's happened over the last 30 years that we can tangibly kind of see.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Measurement sometimes happens backwards, right?
Yep.
And then you describe it. And, but again, to your point, I think it's great that you're trying and you recognize perfection is not around the corner.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think, you know, we care a lot about meaningful business, mm-hmm. and what that means. And there's a severe underappreciation for the difficulty that exists in trying to create meaningful and common good advancing enterprises. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the world needs. And I also think that, you know, in the current political climate, we're continuing to polarize business is bad, big business is bad. But I think that's wrong. Like, I even think to your point about mayors. You know, the funny thing about that is, like, that is almost like a fundamentally politically conservative position to be in, to say that the local people know more about how to govern their locality than the people at the top do. And I think to your point on companies, that's exactly right. How much more time do you guys spend under the governance of your company than under the governance of the governmental institution? Mm. So it's certainly that the companies have a much larger influence on day-to-day society than the actual government does.
So do you guys feel a responsibility with Whiteboard that the people who work for you are being shaped by you?
Absolutely. I was having a conversation last week how, you know, if you look at the research surrounding millennials, almost everybody on our team is a millennial, except for Karen, who is awesome, and she runs our office and she keeps everybody in line. But we're, and the
shout
statistics
out Karen.
Around, yeah,
thank
shout out
you.
For Karen. For, so let me tell a quick story of why Karen is amazing. On the first day that she started, we've been trying to fix a plumbing problem in our previous building for a year and a half. Nobody could sort it out. She came in on day one and said, "I know the guy that owns the building," called him, or the that plumbed the building. Anyway, within 2 hours, it was fixed. I was like, this. So always find that person in your life and have them to rely on, because they're great. But as far as our purpose to our team, if you study the research around millennials and finances, the average millennial checks their bank account less than once a month. And number one, that's mind-blowing, especially to anybody who's boomer and older. Like, how could you be that irresponsible? It's not that they're that irresponsible. It's that boomers raised millennials who had everything they needed. There was never a necessity to be self-sufficient. And so we've got a team of people who, I'm not throwing them all in the bucket of being irresponsible at all, but I'm saying culture has not set them up for this idea of success. And I care a lot about the financial security of people on my team. What I know is that just compensating people more does not solve the problem. I know people in other companies who make substantial incomes who are still trying to figure out why, you know, at the end of the month, metaphorically, the resources aren't there to get all the way through. And I, as a company, I believe it's the obligation, because we have that direct tangible influence. Like, if we don't do it, who else is going to do it? You know, we can't rely on the church or nonprofit institutions or say, okay, I'm going to serve on a board and I'm going to go and pay some money into this thing. You know, those institutions are inefficient, they're ineffective, they just don't work. And so I think as companies, people spend more time working for you than they do anything else in life, period. It's just the way our culture is aimed. And so if we're not concerned about their health and seeing them holistically, then who will be? And there's two sides to that coin, right? Because that can also build a really strong sense of entitlement that is not true. But I do think that companies have that. And, you know, we're in the scale of history, we're not far removed from the Industrial Revolution. We're not far removed from the Great Depression. We're not far removed from the boomer era. And so it feels like maybe these shouldn't be new things, but they really are culturally new things. It's new phenomena that we're dealing with. And it is, you know, this is really the first time that people are looking at companies and saying, you should have an ethical compass and you should be concerned for your people. And I, coming all the way back to the beginning, I do believe that flourishing means that everybody is succeeding. And I think you cannot polarize and pit one versus the other. It's not the big bad institution versus, in some cases it is, and those institutions need to be taken down. They need to be taken down by consumers making decisions. You know, coming in with the sort of nuclear option of legislation and taking a company out is probably not the best way to do that. But consumers should be making those decisions, and companies should carry a higher ethic. And I mean, I could go on and on about that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, considering the higher ethic too, I mean, so what I dream about is you know, so 80%, I think, is the rough estimate that we spend our lives at work or working. It's a lot of time. You know, and then you compare that to the 20% you're doing, you know, you're on vacations or you're with your family or all these different things. And so, you know, think about the higher ethic. You know, Taylor and I've asked the question, like, how do we ensure that nobody who's married on Whiteboard's team gets divorced? Because we know work or the working or the worship of working is a primary motivation for divorce, period. Like, the stats are all around that. So how do we actually create, is it, you know, is it marriage retreats for the people who are married on our team once a year? Is it, you know, bringing in outsiders, you know, who, you know, could speak into not just our discipline and their expertise and the things that we're doing on the technology side, but who are the voices that we just need to listen to anyway because they're full of wisdom, you know, or they offer a curious perspective that maybe our team hasn't heard before. And so, like, coming from a faith background, this idea of business parallel to church has been a huge motive of, like, how can we explore that conversation? Church is obviously big and holistic, you know, but at the same time too, just thinking of it from that perspective has been very liberating in terms of the programs and the things that we're trying to build around making our team better. And then the truth is our team is built off individuals who all have various different life circumstances and who have had moments in their life that have shaped them tremendously. You know, and I mean, that's the magic of what makes great businesses. That's the magic of what makes great teams, is pulling all those various experiences, good and bad, into one place to say, all right, right now we're going to make something together that we hope is going to do something good for whether it's the organization we're working with or, you know, something else. You know, we can come around those different things. It's the magic of life, baby.
All right, so I just want to clear up a rumor or this idea I have in my head that I'm not sure is true, and you're the two guys who can answer this question for me.
Oh, no.
I'm pretty sure I heard, this was like 3 years ago, okay? And right now, if you go on the internet and you go to a website and there is a video playing behind text, it's kind of ubiquitous. But from what I heard, Taylor, you're the one who accidentally discovered that about 3 years ago. Is that true?
It was probably more like 7 years ago, okay. Almost. And I don't know if I can lay a total claim to that discovery, but there was a night when we were working on a site for us, for Whiteboard, and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. This was before I was married, and I was up working on it, and in my stupor made an error in the code and reloaded and got this really crazy, like, video wasn't moving, all the stuff was moving on top of it. Oh my God. This is really neat. And Eric, I guess, was still awake. It's been a little while ago, but I remember we were both like, oh my God, what's going to happen?
We were like, this is it. So yeah. We were like, it's finished.
So we launched the site with this thing, and it was a couple of weeks later, we were nominated for an award site of the day, and we won. And we don't still really, to this day, have no idea how we even got nominated, because you kind of have to,
submit, like, they have a paywall,
and we have no idea who submitted it. And at the time, as an agency, I think we were getting like 300 visits a month to our site, and we had 70,000 in the next 30 days. So it went from like zero to it was insane. But yeah, that was fun. And you know, I'll just add to that, a lot of our work has been that, and that's kind of what creativity is like accidental discovery. And a lot of people don't make enough space for that in their culture. Mm-hmm. We've certainly been through rounds of it. I mean, I would even say right now we have not been in the healthiest position of allowing space for that kind of accidental creative discovery. But that's how many of what we might call our best work, or what the industry has recognized as our best work, has come around when somebody made a goof and was like, oh, that's actually kind of neat.
Yeah, a hilarious story to piggyback off that. So our front end, so what happened was, is people actually started ripping our front end code and actually using it for their own personal sites. So, and I mean, the creative
WordPress themes were launching. I mean, it was crazy. Yeah, like, so, we kept finding the same site over and over.
So it'd be our source code. So Google's crawlers love that. So, like, we never thought Whiteboard was going to rank on Google search. And, like, I mean, even today now,
I mean, like, you didn't pick a good name if you're trying to be number one on Google.
Right. Like, Office Depot, you're looking for a dry erase board. Like, you know, that was never the goal. And, I mean, even today, like, we're still number one, if not three, like, at the lowest of, like, if you just search the term whiteboard, we're typically there. But one of the unique things that happened was our front-end director, or Jonathan Cottrell, our CTO, he was like, you know what? We're going to, like, scare people if they try to rip our source codes. So... if people ripped our source code, it would be the screen would actually flash red in this like huge text that's like, you've been caught. We know who you are. You've just committed copyright infringement. And
it would email us the domain that they launched it at.
So the best one I ever got, I guess the guy ripped it. I got the notification, so I saw it, and then immediately got an apology letter from the New Yorker and their development team. And they were like, hey, we just wanted to teach our developers like a little bit about parallax and what's going on in your front end code. And I told them, it's totally fine. You can just tell us if you need us to need help or anything like that. So, funny story.
Well, there you guys go. Whiteboard has helped transform the internet about 5 years ago with something called parallax. Anytime you see a video playing behind solid text, that's Taylor Jones.
Some other people in the world are going to resent that. I'm sorry.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you all for being here.
Yeah,
very grateful.
Yeah. Very much our pleasure. Thanks for the invitation, and it was a great honor to spend some time with you guys today.
Yep. Thank you all. This has been wildly therapeutic.
I'm going to need an hour to go and compose myself after this.
Thank you so much to Eric and Taylor for coming on the pod and explaining B Corp and the significance of that certification for their business, and really the way in which their company is contributing to the thriving of their employees and our community. In the show notes of this episode, you can find links to their website, the B Corp website, and a link to an article that Eric Brown wrote on Medium called The Reformation of Internet Manners that is well worth your time to check out. I also want to thank my friend Lowry Moyle for co-hosting this episode. Lowry is the creator of Thankful Gleaner, a consultancy that comes alongside businesses to help them connect their practices to their own ethical core. Lowry has worked with a lot of different entities in Chattanooga, including Launch, the Company Lab, our friends over at Mad Priest Coffee Roasters, the Chattanooga Fellows, and the City of Chattanooga. So if you are someone who owns a business and have struggled with aligning your purpose with your practice, or perhaps you are looking for ways to measure success beyond the bottom line, then shoot Lowry a message at lowry@thankfulgleaner.com. That's lowry@thankfulgleaner.com. And you can also find the link to his website in our show notes. And thank you so much to the Chattanooga Public Library and Dynamo Studios for allowing us to record down there on the second floor of the Downtown Library. If you haven't been to the Downtown Library in a while, you need to check it out. There's so much going on there, so much that will really make you reimagine how important and critical a public place of learning like this can be for a flourishing community. And thank you so much to Meredith Levine of the Library for producing this episode. Please take a moment and subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done so already. We really want the Camp House podcast to be a resource that connects you to the people, organizations, and the ideas that make Chattanooga such a great community. So if this is something that has connected, informed, and inspired you, then please share this episode with a friend. And you can do that at thecamphouse.com/podcast. Well, thank you all for being here, and I hope you have a great day.